KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fillmore.
I'm from San Jose.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
West Oakland.
East Oakland.
Coming up after the devastating Valley Fire, Lake County wants to rebuild something better than what was lost.
Even people from San Francisco, for example, who never even knew where Lake County was prior to the Valley Fire, now they see and realize that here's this hidden gem up here that it's only 2 hours away.
But can improvement include everybody? Then a new documentary tells the story of iconic gay San Francisco author Armistead Maupin. Before coming to the city, he was
conservative, believed in segregation, you know, been such a patriotic soldier in Vietnam that he was invited to meet Richard Nixon.
Maupin before Tales of the City. Today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. This morning in San Francisco's Potrero Hill neighborhood, a gunman killed three people and then himself. Laura Wenis went to the scene.
So I'm just hanging out after the press conference that police just gave, their last press conference of the day on Utah and Mariposa streets. It's about a block away from the UPS facility where the shooting happened at 17th and Utah streets. Things have calmed down a lot since earlier this morning when, of course, there was a huge police response to the location and police were evacuating the building and then they did an extensive search of the inside to make sure that nobody was left hiding inside. We spoke to a couple of employees at UPS. They're pretty shy. They didn't want to say too much, but one of them did tell us that the shooting might have started just before a morning meeting that they were going to have. And that the shooter was someone who had a family. He was quiet and kept to himself. He'd been working there for several years. Another person told us that he might have been the subject of some hazing, some jokes at his expense, which he sort of described as just people messing around as they do. But other than that, it's not really clear what the motive was. But it does seem that the shooter was an employee, as well as the three people whose lives he claimed. Police are still investigating. We're gonna wait for the medical examiner to identify the victims as well as the shooter. It's unclear what their next steps are exactly, but it sounds like they're going to have to try and recreate the crime scene and figure out what happened.
That's KALW's Laura Wenis. Andy Bosselman contributed to that report. Find more information at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. Now on to the rest of the show. You may know Lake County for Harbin Hot Springs, a place to relax, get centered, or maybe you know it as a marijuana farmland. Or maybe, like a lot of people in the Bay Area, your first association is fire. Two summers ago, Lake County was struck by the third most destructive wildfire in California history.
The flames were coming over the hillside. I thought, being surrounded.
The sky's black and the wind was just nuts.
The vacuum from the fire sucking all the oxygen out of the valley.
We literally came up like on a wall of fire. Basically just says there's no way out.
7 days I didn't sleep for 7 days.
The fire forced Lake County to transform. Close to 2,000 buildings burned. Now there's the kind of housing scarcity that many in the Bay Area know well. In the long run, some residents see the rebuild as a chance to improve the standard of living in Lake County. But others worry the transformation will leave them out. KALW's housing reporter Liza Veal takes us there.
When I ask about the fire recovery, a lot of people point me to one of Lake County's supervisors, Rob Brown. It seems like he hasn't taken a day off work since the fire, 20 months ago. I find him on the main street of his hometown of Kelseyville, and we head over to his SUV for a tour.
Your car's unlocked.
Yeah, I can't lock it.
Why can't you lock it?
I'd lock my keys in it. That wouldn't make sense, would it?
Welcome to Kelseyville.
Yeah.
Not in San Francisco anymore.
No, that's right.
We pull out of the little strip of village and head up into the mountains. It's all green forests. Vistas of the valley sometimes open up into long stretches of bald, stubbly black hillside where the fire cleared its path.
We're going to go where the fire started in general. We're going to show you where a lot of the rebuild is occurring. just here in three homes. You have a beautiful home, you have a FEMA trailer, you have a modular, and you have somebody living in a camp trailer. Boom, 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 right next to each other.
We're in a steep little ravine with only one road in and out. Rob Brown says the night of the fire, he feared people here would be trapped, so he rushed over. Everyone got out, though, except one man.
He went the wrong way. And he got caught at a gate up here and perished in this terror by the
So
gate.
there was just fire on all sides.
It was everywhere.
That man was one of four people killed by the fire that day. For his day job, Rob Brown's a bail bondsman. He finds people hiding in Lake County who've skipped bail. So he knows every nook and cranny of the region. He's also a triathlete.
And I live off adrenaline. I'm an adrenaline junkie.
So he was up around the clock for a week after the fire, trying to get people evacuated, save pets, coordinate transportation to school, build shelters.
Did it ever feel like a lot of things in your life have been leading to this kind of moment?
You know what? I've said that over and over again. All these things that prepared me for this, you know, I felt like I was able to finally pull all that together for my whole life.
But the longer-term recovery is harder to pull off with sheer adrenaline. The Lake County Sheriff estimates that more than 3,600 people lost their homes in the fire. Almost 2 years later, the county's only issued a few hundred permits to rebuild, meaning a lot of people are still waiting and a lot have moved away. But Rob Brown says if they rush construction, Lake County will miss the opportunity to build something better than what they lost. For people who are still living in temporary housing or staying with family, it's hard to take the long view. 20 months in, Janet Gill still hasn't begun to rebuild the home she lost.
We're standing in my driveway. There is where my house was.
She points to a cleared lot that's grown over with grass. The only sign is the stone deck that's stranded on its own, fitted around a phantom house.
My former husband and I built it ourselves. Anyway, it turned out really nice, and now it's in the trash.
Her dog, Kirby, is busy tromping all over the property. She says she brings him here pretty often. They both like to spend time in their old yard. Janet used to have two dogs.
Another one, I had to leave the day of the fire, so he didn't make it. I still feel bad not trying or something, but
no.
I was running out of time. And then my cat, she died of a heart attack, I guess, in the parking lot the night of when we were in evacuation.
They waited hours in the car to get to shelter. And Janet feels like the waiting process that began that night never ended. See, once residents get through the permitting process, they're competing with neighbors to find contractors and builders whose rates have surged due to high demand. And the third major hurdle, haggling with insurance companies. People here talk about the insurance process like it's purgatory. Imagine something like one endless customer service phone call, only the operators are standing between you and being able to settle into a new life after everything you own burned. And it goes on for 2 years. Janet is spinning her wheels, just about ready to sell the property she loves because she needs to move into a home before insurance expires. At the Twin Pines Casino in Middletown, Jeremy Seary tells me even people that didn't lose their homes feel the impact of the loss.
Fire happened, everything's destroyed, and everyone kind of just branched away from here. You know, it really broke up our ring of friends.
Also, Jeremy lost his job when the place he worked burned down. He joined a program that employs people like him, out of work after the fire.
They're giving these people, they can make $12,000, and it's all related to fire cleanup. And I actually was hired on for that, and it, you know, it was a big help, yeah.
But that's only a short-term gig, and now Jeremy's still looking for work. So he's spent a lot of time at the casino since the fire.
It'll take your money.
Yeah. He says he can win $500 in a day.
It'll lure you back. And then usually in those situations, you'll be coming back like the next day and the day after because you just won all that money. I just enjoy gambling.
Some people have left Lake County, not just because the hassle or the money was too much, but because the place reminds them of loss. That leaves people like Cecilia Nelson, who lives on Cobb Mountain, to feel like they're the only ones keeping memories alive.
Welcome to McDonald's. May I take your order? Big Mac, small fries, cherry Coke, and apple pie.
Cecilia had the bad luck of moving her kids into her parents' house just a few weeks before the fire burned it down, destroying everything.
Kids' pictures and videos. I think videos are probably the biggest thing that hurts the most. It's like it's only in my head. I can't ever re-show them.
She's got a girl and a boy, and her boyfriend's daughter is over two.
64. No repeats.
Cecilia got $10,000 in FEMA money, but after buying all new possessions, it's not helping with rent, which has jumped up after the fire.
And yet your income has to be double to even be able to apply for something what I'm in.
She works at a dermatology office, and since the fire, she's been cleaning houses on the side. She says the whole county is feeling the rent hikes, not just the areas that burned.
I've heard when people are looking, they're like, well, why is it so high? And they pretty much said that they want to gouge the insurance company.
As in, they think renters can afford higher prices because they have insurance money. But for a lot of people, like Cecilia's parents, insurance ran out months ago. Fortunately, Cecilia won't have to rent for long. She's getting a home through Habitat for Humanity. It's a sweat equity program, meaning if she puts in 200 hours building others' homes, she gets one too. Cecilia says the sweat equity thing comes naturally to the area.
They'll pull together and make sure that everyone has the money to keep going.
Many of those who are underinsured or renting when they lost their homes have had to depend on the community or charities in order to stay in the area. And some people in Lake County say there hasn't been nearly enough help to meet the need. People like the members of the recovery and revitalization group called Valley Fire Phoenix Rising. I met with four of them over homemade blueberry kombucha. Here's Fairlight Algren.
Well, okay, so the thing about Lake County is the beautiful part about it, I think, is its raw authenticity and the fact that it is the last remaining Wild West that we have here,
it's
right?
The only place We've got in this California whole... where trailer trash can have a lake view.
The only place in California where trailer trash can have a lake view. That's Christine Terrell. And though Lake County is probably not as unique as they're describing it, it does have one of the highest poverty rates in the state.
Lake County is an interesting mix because there's a lot of people here that, you know, they're ranchers' kids and things.
A lot of old walnut farms transitioning to marijuana or just shutting down. And another group attracted to the area by things like Harbin Hot Springs.
Various kinds of counterculture, healthy, run around naked in the hot springs.
Oh, don't say that. There's lots of hippies that are not naked.
The Phoenix Rising group wants the rebuild to include all of Lake County. Their hope is to build a self-sustaining eco-village filled with affordable, tiny homes. Back on our driving tour, Supervisor Rob Brown says he's not interested in experimenting with tiny homes. He wants to make what he thinks is a more lasting investment in Lake County. Solid infrastructure, brand new nice houses, people moving here to support the businesses and schools that might not survive the population losses from the fire.
Even people from San Francisco, for example, who never even knew where Lake County was prior to the Valley Fire, now they see and hear different stories about it and realize that here's this hidden gem up here that's only 2 hours away.
He predicts that the long-term effect of the fire devastation will be, counterintuitively, that the county becomes a more affluent place.
I think that's what's going to end up happening, that you got a place that people will desire to come to.
As for the Phoenix Rising group's goal of making it possible for poor people to stay here and live off the land, Supervisor Brown says that's not a top priority for him.
When you talk about poor people, your first image is people that are struggling to try to get by. That's not always the case. Sometimes you have people who don't want to work. You know, you have able-bodied men that are in their 30s that would rather be up all night doing crank than going out and getting a job. And so, ideally, push them out, get rid of them.
Replace. How do you do that?
Well, anytime you take away blight and you bring in, you know, a higher quality of living, higher standard of living for people, you feel more comfortable, that's going to happen.
But how do you know that you're getting rid of not the, you know, struggling to get by?
No, well, okay, that's the balance. That's where you really want to be careful because there are those.
The balance between making a comeback from the disaster and making a comeback unaffordable for some of its victims. In Lake County, I'm Liza Veal for Cross Currents.
What housing stories do you want us to cover? Let us know at housing@klw.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Armistead Maupin is the veteran San Francisco writer known for his iconic series, Tales of the City. In his famous series, which started off in the San Francisco Chronicle, Maupin wove titillating fiction about characters from around San Francisco. They're told through the protagonist, Mary Ann Singleton, who moves to the city from Ohio. And she meets a host of colorful city characters, rich and poor, gay, straight, and bisexual. A new documentary exploring Maupin's life will debut at this year's Frameline Film Festival, which kicks off tomorrow. It's called The Untold Tales of Armistead Maupin. Director Jennifer Kroot stopped by to tell us more about his personal life. She says Maupin wasn't always as unabashedly openly gay as San Franciscans knew him to be through the series. I asked her first to describe Maupin's life before coming to San Francisco in the 60s.
You know, serious conservative from, you know, North Carolina, believed in segregation, was closeted, all these things, had, you know, been such a patriotic soldier in Vietnam that he was invited to meet Richard Nixon. He had worked for Jesse Helms.
Jesse Helms gave me my first writing job. He thought I was the hope of the future. The only f-ing thing he's ever been right about.
These intense conservative experiences of his youth, I just wondered how could somebody, you know, believe, I think with their heart, or I don't know if his heart believed it, but really believe that they believed it, and then at some point around the age of 30, change all that and not only come out, but really change your belief system.
Right. And what was the story there? Without giving too much about the film, because, you know, we don't want to divulge too much. But how did that happen? What was that process like for him from going from this conservative person who believed in conservative ideals to this?
I think, he has a funny answer that I don't think I should say on the radio, but that starts with a D. So, but beyond that, I think once he realized, you know, he had had some, you know, sexual experiences with men in North Carolina before he went to Vietnam. And I think felt like he knew then that he was gay. I mean, he already knew that earlier, but he always says through his sexuality, he was able to open his heart. It was, you know, not till he came to San Francisco, a little bit after that, that he finally did hesitantly come out to a woman friend. And then after that, just, you know, never went, nailed the closet door shut, I think he says. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, he suddenly realized that when you're out and then he was getting well known as a writer, that even if you don't want to be an activist, you kind of are in a position where you are. And I think you have to really think about, you know, how you're representing what you are, mm-hmm. if you're comfortable with it. And then you have to think about how are those people treated and talk about your experience and how was I treating those people, mm-hmm. those people, you know?
Right.
When I was working with Jesse Helms, like, you know, and really kind of examine that. So I think that's a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. But in the sense he was gay, it gave him the opportunity to reexamine, you know, his belief system.
Right.
So here's the scene where he actually comes out to a woman friend of his after he's moved to San Francisco. And then he talks a bit about what the sort of sexual transformation brought to his sort of, I guess, philosophical transformation.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a listen.
It opened my heart to such an extent that I started just taking the world in a different way. Everything I'd ever been taught was falling away. And I just realized what it was to be with another human being, what human feelings were. And that made me examine all the little prejudices that I'd been given when I was growing up. It wasn't just racist stuff, it was my family telling me that I was better than anybody because it was in my bloodline, you know, just nonsense. And it made me into a writer. That's what it did, and among other things, it made me into a writer.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba, and that was a clip from the new film, The Untold Tales of Armistead Maupin. And with me is the maker of the film, Jennifer Crute. So in talking with Armistead, what things surprised you that you... I mean, this is a big surprise, the whole kind of move from philosophy to philosophy. What other things did you not expect?
Well, I didn't know that he was such kind of a zealot character, where it's like there's almost like an American history lesson through Armistead Maupin that he would have, you know, been in the segregated South and experienced that kind of firsthand, and then, you know, been in Vietnam and met those right-wing characters that I mentioned, Nixon and Jesse Helms, and then coming to San Francisco in the 70s when, you know, the moment that everybody, you know, fantasizes about in San Francisco and you know, being here at the time, you know, when Harvey Milk was shot and Jim Jones was here and all these, you know, the craziest time for San Francisco. And and there's so many more things like that, including that he was friends with Rock Hudson and had a intimate relationship.
Okay.
Just friends with that, and he doesn't like it to be called lovers.
During the period while I was waiting for Tales to begin, I actually met Rock Hudson. He was visiting San Francisco and invited us up to his suite at the Fairmont Hotel. And he said, I have a little reading to do. And he produced the Bulldog edition of the Chronicle, which was the early edition that appeared the night before. So he stood up a little drunkenly and read the first chapter of Tales of the City. He meant it to be charming, and I was charmed. And the next day, he and his partner invited me to dinner in San Francisco. Do you want me to go on?
I was just going to ask.
How sexy are we
going
to get
here? Oh, we're going there. All right. So that was really titillating to hear about, you know, what that was like with such a, you know, big leading man star who was obviously closeted all that time that he was so famous, and what that would be like. And then years later, when Rock Hudson was dying of AIDS, of course, Armistead was actually the first person to out him publicly, which was quite controversial. Another thing that's just been interesting to think about, I don't know if it's a surprise, but his term logical family, which is as opposed to a biological family.
Right.
Yeah, so the non-blood related family that
a
you
family
have.
Family that makes sense, mm-hmm. he says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those like-minded people who support you. And just really does touch people of all ages, and especially at a time of, you know, family members not getting along for political reasons, whether, you know, regardless of being straight or gay or anything, but just mm-hmm. even political ideas, you know, maybe if they're not working for you, maybe it's okay just to be with people that understand that share your viewpoints, you know, and support you for
and
who you are.
And that's not easy.
Mm-mm.
That's
no, it's not
an easy thing to do.
No, I mean, I think Armistead really wanted his father's approval for so much of his life, and that those are very painful things to have to, you know, never be able to get someone's approval, and then to consciously be able to think, well, I'm going to find people who support me that I can support in return and mm-hmm. see eye to eye with, and mm-hmm. people, you know, who won't judge me for being gay.
That was Jennifer Crute, director of the new documentary, The Untold Tales of Armistead Maupin. It debuts tomorrow as part of the Frameline Film Festival. And that's all for Cross Currents today. Our team includes Andy Bosselman, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Sonia Hudson, Angela Johnston, Jeremy Ju, Lisa Morehouse, James Rollins, Judy Silber, Carrie Spivak, Andrew Stelzer, and Laura Wenis. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien, and our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.
Just received your letter.
Today's local music is by Maria Muldauer. She has a free show in the courtyard of the Bolinas Museum on Saturday. It's an afternoon show, part of the museum's new counterculture and creativity exhibit. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
But in my memory lingers all you once were to me. I'm gonna give you one more chance to prove what you can be.